Welcome to Mother Miriam Live on the Station of the Cross Catholic Radio Network with live video streaming brought to you by LifeSite News and the Station of the Cross. Call Mother with your questions at 1-877-511-5483 or email her at mother@thestationofthecross.com. You can view the live stream on Facebook at Mother Miriam Live. Now, here's Mother Miriam.
Hello, beloved family. How are you? I'm happy to be with you. It is Wednesday after the Holy Week of Easter, after Divine Mercy Sunday, and it is storming in Winnsboro, Texas. So hopefully we won't have any interference on the program, but I'm thrilled to be with you. And a number of you may know that the new document, the Declaration on Dignitas Infinita, the Declaration on Human Dignity, has come out by the Vatican, written by Cardinal Fernandez, who wrote Fiducia Supplicans on the blessing of homosexual couples, which is heretical and caused a great deal of upset. This declaration, Dignitas Infinita, on human dignity, is for the most part good. It has one major problem concerning a grave matter of our time, homosexuality. It's a long presentation, a long declaration, but it affirms much of Catholic teaching. So I thought not everyone is going to have the opportunity to get to it. So it's on the Vatican website. And if you wish to read the whole, in its entirety, just put the Declaration on Human Dignity, or Dignitas Infinita, in your search engine, and you will come up with it. I thought I would read it through, mostly affirming what the Catholic Church teaches, until we come to a problematic area. It's way too long for today's program, so I'll read what we can today and then perhaps continue tomorrow. It begins, during the Congresso of 15th of March 2019, that's when this began to be written, the then congregation, now it's the dicastery, the then congregation for the doctrine of faith decided to commence the drafting of a text highlighting the indispensable nature of the dignity of the human person in Christian anthropology. Anthropology is the study of man, illustrating the significance and beneficial implications of the concept in the social, political, and economic realms, while also taking into account the latest developments on the subject in academia and the ambivalent ways in which the concept is understood today. An initial draft of the text was prepared with the help of some experts in 2019, but a consulta ristretta of the congregation convened on 8th October of the same year, and they found it to be unsatisfactory. The doctrinal office then prepared another draft based on the contribution of various experts, which was presented and discussed in another consult held on the 4th of October, 2021. In January 2022, the new draft was presented during the plenary session of the congregation, during which the members took steps to shorten and simplify the text. Following this, on 6th February 2023, the amended version of the new draft was reviewed by a consulta ristretta, which proposed some additional modifications. An updated version was then submitted for the members' consideration during the ordinary session of the dicastery on the 3rd of May, 2023, where members agreed that the document with some adjustments could be published. Subsequently, Pope Francis approved the deliberations of that session during the audience granted on the 13th of November, 2023. On this occasion, Pope Francis also asked that the document highlight topics closely connected to the theme of dignity, such as poverty, the situation of migrants, violence against women, human trafficking, war, and other themes. To honor the Holy Father's directions, the doctrinal section of the Dicastery dedicated a congresso to an in-depth study of the encyclical Fratelli Tutti, which offers an original analysis and further consideration of the theme of human dignity beyond all circumstances. We're getting to this current document now. On the 2nd of February, 2024, this year, a new and significantly modified version of this text was sent to the members of the Dicastery ahead of the ordinary session on 28th February, 2024. The letter accompanying the draft included the following clarification, quote, "This additional drafting was necessary to meet a specific request of the Holy Father, namely, he explicitly urged that more attention be given to the grave violations of human dignity in our time, particularly in light of the encyclical Fratelli Tutti, and with this, the doctrinal office took steps to reduce the initial part." And to develop in greater detail what the Holy Father indicated. The text of the current declaration was finally approved during the above-mentioned Feria 4 of 28 February 2024, then in the audience granted to me, the author of this introduction, and to Monsignor Armando Matteo, Secretary of the Doctrinal Section, on 25th March 2024, the Holy Father approved this declaration and ordered its publication. Hold on now. Hold on just a moment. Well, I'll continue to read the introduction. The five-year course of the text preparation helps us to understand that the document before us reflects the gravity and dignity. The text required a considerable process of maturation to arrive at the final version that we have published today. In its initial three sections, the declaration recalls fundamental principles and theoretical premises with the goal of offering important clarifications that can help avoid frequent confusion that surrounds the use of the term dignity. The fourth section, I can think offhand of the fallacy, false statement of dying with dignity. There's no such thing. You cannot die with dignity by killing a person or killing yourself. There's no dignity in that. So it helps the frequent confusion that surrounds the use of the term dignity. The fourth section presents some current and problematic situations in which the immense and inalienable dignity due to every person is not sufficiently recognized. The Church sees the condemnation of these grave and current violations of human dignity as a necessary measure, for she sustains the deep conviction that we cannot separate faith from the defense of human dignity, evangelization from the promotion of a dignified life, and spirituality from a commitment to the dignity of every human being. That's good. This dignity of every human being can be understood as infinite, as Pope St. John II affirmed, Pope St. John Paul II affirmed in a meeting for people living with various limitations or disabilities. He said this to show how human dignity transcends all outward appearances and specific aspects of people's lives. In Fratelli Tutti, Pope Francis wanted to underscore that this dignity exists beyond all circumstances. With this, he summoned all people to defend human dignity in every cultural context and every moment of human existence, regardless of physical, psychological, social, or even moral deficiencies. The Declaration strives to show that this is a universal truth that we are all called to recognize as a fundamental condition for our societies to be truly just, peaceful, healthy, and authentically human. Although not comprehensive, The topics discussed in this declaration are selected to illuminate different facets of human dignity that might be obscured in many people's consciences. Some topics may resonate more with some sectors of society than others. Nevertheless, all of them strike us as being necessary because taken together, they help us recognize the harmony and richness of the thought about human dignity that flows from the gospel. This declaration does not set out to exhaust such a rich and crucial subject. Instead, its aim is to offer some points for reflection that can help us maintain an awareness of human dignity amid the complex historical moment in which we are living. This is so that we may not lose our way and open ourselves up to more wounds and profound sufferings amid the numerous concerns and anxieties of our time. This now concludes the introduction by Victor Manuel Cardinal Fernandez, Prefect of the Dicastery of the Doctrine of Faith. When we come back, beloved, we'll get into the actual document. I think this is important to solidly state the Church's position, which cannot change from the deposit of faith 2,000 years ago. It cannot change on what it means, the human dignity of every single person, regardless of circumstances. The dignity of a person does not, when we come back, sorry for that fumbling, we'll be right back.
The Station of the Cross Catholic Media Network presents Saints and Seasons. On April 10th, we celebrate the feast of Holy Ezekiel, the prophet. Ezekiel, whose name in Hebrew means God is strong or whom God strengthens, was an Israelite priest and the son of a priest named Buzi. After Jerusalem fell to the pagan Babylonians, Ezekiel and his wife were expelled from the city, like many other Jews, and taken in captivity to Babylon. After about 5 years in this exile, Ezekiel received a vision of various forms of angels, including the wheels within wheels that are identified as thrones in the angelic hierarchy. These angels were shown to be serving God, who appeared in the likeness of a man upon a sapphire throne. The Lord gave Ezekiel a commission as a prophet, which Ezekiel would fulfill for over 20 years. St. John quotes Ezekiel many times throughout the Book of Apocalypse. Ezekiel is also the source of Our Lady's title, Porta Coeli, or Gate of Heaven. The traditional Roman martyrology relates that Ezekiel was executed in Babylon by the judge of the Israelites because Ezekiel rebuked him for idolatry. He is also mentioned on July 23rd in the modern calendar. Also honored on this day are St. Macarius of Antioch, St. Bodimus, St. Fulbert of Chartres, St. Malchus of Waterford, St. Magdalene of Canossa, the birthday into heaven of St. Michael of the Saints, and many other martyrs, confessors, and holy virgins. For more about the saints and seasons of the Catholic Church, visit thestationofthecross.com/saints-and-seasons.
The Station of the Cross Catholic Media Network is dedicated to answering the critical need of access to quality, consistent, professional, and proven Catholic programming. We cannot rely on other media outlets to properly represent our church. Catholic Radio reaches Catholics, non-Catholic Christians, and non-believers alike. As a nonprofit lay organization financially independent of your diocese, our apostolate is listener-supported. Welcome to Mother Miriam Live on the Station of the Cross Catholic Radio Network with live video streaming brought to you by LifeSite News and the Station of the Cross. Call Mother with your questions at 1-877-511-5483 or email her at mother@thestationofthecross.com.
Welcome back, beloved, to Mother Miriam Live. We've just read through the introduction by Cardinal Fernandez of the latest encyclical from the Vatican titled Dignitas Infinita, that is, human dignity. And we're now going to begin the introduction, and we'll only read until the second break, after which we'll have a half hour for your calls and your emails. and we'll continue this tomorrow. We won't finish it today. And the first point in the introduction says that every human person possesses an infinite dignity, inalienably grounded in his or her very being, which prevails in and beyond every circumstance, state, or situation the person may ever encounter. This principle, which is fully recognizable even by reason alone, underlies the primacy of the human person and the protection of human rights. In light of revelation, the Church resolutely reiterates and confirms the ontological dignity of the human person, created in the image and likeness of God and redeemed in Jesus Christ. From this truth, the Church draws the reasons for her commitment to the weak and those less endowed with power, always insisting on the primacy of the human person and the defense of his or her dignity beyond every circumstance. So I'm just going to add here that there are so many people who feel unworthy. You don't feel that you are special or loved or whatever it is. That is your personal feeling, and you have been perhaps made to feel that by your family or people you know or your circumstances. But the fact is, you are made in the image of God, who is perfect, and you have a human dignity that is not less or more than any other human being on earth. We are made in the image of God, every one of us, and our human dignity is not increased or lessened by our circumstances or our handicaps. Second point here, this ontological dignity and the unique and eminent value of every man and woman in the world was reaffirmed authoritatively in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, issued by the United States General Assembly on the 10th of December, 1948. As we commemorate the 75th anniversary of this document, the Church sees an opportunity to proclaim anew its conviction that all human beings, created by God and redeemed by Christ, must be recognized and treated with respect and love due to their inalienable dignity. The anniversary also provides an occasion for the Church to clarify some frequent misconceptions concerning human dignity and to address some serious and urgent related issues. Again, beloved, the fact that we're created in the image of God gives us an infinite human dignity. Nothing can touch that. It does not give us the right to live in disordered lives or to live in sin. Point three says, from the start of her mission and propelled by the gospel, the Church has striven to affirm human freedom and promote the rights of all people. In recent times, thanks to the voices of the pontiffs, the Church has made a deliberate effort to formulate this commitment in more explicit terms through a renewed call to acknowledge the fundamental dignity inherent in every person. On this point, Pope St. Paul VI affirmed that, quote, no anthropology, that study of man, no anthropology equals that of the Church regarding the human person, particularly concerning the person's originality, dignity, and intangibility and richness of the person's fundamental rights, sacredness, capacity for education, aspiration to a complete development, and immortality, end quote. Point four, Pope St. John Paul II. During the Third General Conference of Latin American and Caribbean Bishops in Puebla in 1979, affirmed that human dignity is, a gospel value that cannot be despised without greatly offending the Creator. This dignity is infringed on the individual level when due regard is not had for values such as freedom, the right to profess one's religion, physical and mental integrity, the right to essential goods, to life. it is infringed on the social and political level when man cannot exercise his right of participation, or when he is subjected to unjust and unlawful coercion, or submitted to physical or mental torture. If the church makes herself present in the defense of or in the advancement of human dignity, she does so in line with her mission, which, although it is religious and not social or political, cannot fail to consider man in the entirety of his being. That's a good statement. Let me just say that. Church makes herself present in the defense of or in the advancement of human dignity. She does so in line with her mission, which, although, listen to this, it is religious. The church's mission is religious, not social and not political. And it cannot fail to consider man in the entirety of his being. Number five, then in 2010, addressing the Pontifical Academy for Life, Pope Benedict XVI declared that human dignity is a fundamental principle which faith in the crucified and risen Jesus Christ has always defended, especially when in respect of the simplest and most defenseless people, it is disregarded. On another occasion, speaking to economists, he stated that the economy and finance do not exist for their own sake. They are only an instrument or means. Their sole end is the human person and his or her total fulfillment and dignity. This is the only capital, and it is right to safeguard. Number six, from the start of his pontificate, Pope Francis has invited the church to believe in a father, quote, believe in a father who loves all men and women with an infinite love, realizing that he thereby confers upon them an infinite dignity, end quote. He has strongly emphasized that such an immense dignity is an original datum, that is something given, that is to be acknowledged faithfully and welcomed with gratitude. Based on this recognition and acceptance of human dignity, a new coexistence among people can be established that develops social relationships in the context of authentic fraternity. Indeed, only by acknowledging the dignity of each human person can we contribute to the gospel, to the rebirth of a universal aspiration to fraternity. Pope Francis affirms that the wellspring of human dignity and fraternity is in the gospel of Jesus Christ. But even human reason can arrive at this conviction through reflection and dialogue, since the dignity of others is to be respected in all circumstances, not because that dignity is something we have invented or imagined, but because human beings possess an intrinsic worth superior to that of material objects and contingent situations. This requires that they be treated differently, that every human being possess an inalienable dignity is a truth that corresponds to human nature apart from all cultural change. Pope Francis concludes, human beings have the same inviolable dignity in every age of history, and no one can consider himself or herself authorized by particular situations to deny this conviction or to act against it. From this perspective, Pope Francis's encyclical Fratelli Tutti constitutes a kind of Magna Carta of our contemporary tasks to protect and promote human dignity. I want to go back to one sentence here. It says, go back here. Pope Francis affirms that the wellspring of human dignity and fraternity is in the gospel of Jesus Christ. But even human reason can arrive at this conviction through reflection and dialogue, since the dignity of others is to be respected in all circumstances, not because that dignity is something we have invented or imagined, but because human beings possess an intrinsic worth superior to that of material objects and contingent situations. This requires that they be treated differently. Okay. Not one from another. That's what confused me, that they be treated differently. Not one person from another, but differently from material objects. Hold on, please. There is no created thing other than the human person that has the dignity of the human person. And then there's a subtitle here, a fundamental clarification, point 7. There is a widespread agreement today on the importance and normative scope of human dignity and on the unique and transcendent value of every human being. However, the phrase, the dignity of the human person, risks lending itself to a variety of interpretations that can yield potential ambiguities and contradictions that leads us to wonder whether the equal dignity of all human beings is truly recognized, respected, protected, and promoted in every situation. This brings us to recognize the possibility of a fourfold distinction of the concept of dignity: ontological dignity, moral dignity, social dignity, and existential dignity. The most important among these is the ontological dignity that belongs to the person in creation, beloved, that belongs to the person as such simply because he or she exists and is willed, created, and loved by God. Ontological dignity is indelible and remains valid beyond any circumstances in which the person may find themselves. Okay, we'll stop there. It goes on to the other three forms of dignity. It stops there. So we have a dignity because we're made in the image of God. We are willed, we are created, and we are loved. That is true about every single human person that exists. And beloved, there is no circumstance, failure, success, anything that happens in someone's life, fortunes or misfortunes, that can change that. If you are breathing, you are willed, you are created, and you are loved by God. There's the music for our second break, beloved. And when we come back, we'll have a half hour to ourselves for your calls and your emails. We'll be right back. Hello, beloved. This is Mother Miriam, host of Mother Miriam Live. Like the Catholic Current and the many other programs that originate from the Station of the Cross, Divine Mercy in My Soul is all about the messages that Jesus revealed to Saint Faustina. It is aired every Sunday morning at 11 Eastern and Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Or you can listen anytime to Divine Mercy in My Soul on the iCatholic Radio mobile app.
At the Station of the Cross, we understand that life circumstances can affect your giving options, whether by moving or by switching banks and credit card numbers. Please let us know if recent changes have been made to your payment information so that we can better serve you as you continue to bless us with your financial support. Update your information today at thestationofthecross.com or by calling 1-877-888-6279, extension 104.
The Station of the Cross has many ways to keep you informed about our programming. You can view the highlights of our primetime programming schedule or the full 24/7 programming grid at both thestationofthecross.com or the free iCatholic Radio app. Just search under the Programming tab. Our website also offers a printable version for your convenience.
The Catholic Current, bringing Christ to the world and the world to Christ.
We've seen historically, first there was a war against the church, and then there was a war against Christ, and then there was a war against Creator, and now there's a war against creature. So what it seems to me is a rage against everything that's real.
Catholic Current, 5 p.m. Eastern, from the Station of the Cross and on the iCatholic Radio mobile app.
Welcome to Mother Miriam Live on the Station of the Cross Catholic Radio Network with live video streaming brought to you by LifeSite News and the Station of the Cross. Call Mother with your questions at 1-877-511-5483 or email her at mother@thestationofthecross.com.
Welcome back, beloved, to Mother Miriam Live. I am she and we are live, and I am thrilled to be with you. And this is our half hour together, and the heart of the matter is the matter of your heart. Feel free to call in. Our lines are open with anything whatsoever on your heart. Toll free, 1-877-511-5483, or email at mother@thestationofthecross.com. We have an email from Gail who says, am I able to offer my 9 First Fridays to the Sacred Heart for final repentance of a living member of my family? My husband and daughters do not practice their faith, and I constantly pray and offer sacrifices for their souls. Thank you, and may God continue to bless you and the sisters, Gail. Thank you, Gail. The answer is yes. The first object of the First Fridays is the Sacred Heart. That heart, reparation for the Sacred Heart, that heart which he told to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, that has so loved and is so little loved in return. So that's number one, to make reparation for the offenses against that Sacred Heart. And also, you can certainly add that the additional intention for final repentance for your family. Absolutely. You can do that at Mass. You can do that with the Rosary. With any devotion, you can include the members of your family for final perseverance. Absolutely. We have an email from Linda, and she says, I remarried to a man whom I later discovered to be a narcissist, and I'm not sure what to do. I'm 62 years old and would appreciate your advice as to how I might proceed. I know this isn't very much information, but are there any general tips that you may be able to share? Of course, Linda. I don't know if you, you're remarried. I don't know if you're Catholic. I don't know if you got an annulment. I don't know if you remarriage is in the church. But you have remarried, and I don't know what preparation you made to remarry this man. The fact that you have discovered that he's a narcissist, we discover after we marry and we live with someone many things about them that we didn't know before. And your role is to be the holiest, most loving, the best wife you could be. That's your vocation. Wives are to love their husbands and to submit to them as to Christ. And so you are to be a loving wife to your husband. His behavior, his personality, his immaturity, his weaknesses are not to direct your behavior. You have a holy vocation. You have made vows to love and cherish one another and obey until death do you part. That is your vow, and that's what you do, Linda. And perhaps your own maturity, your own holiness, your attention to him, your respect, your love for him. Don't correct him. Don't holler at him. Just your love. Let it be God's love to him. And you might help him to mature and to begin to reach out to others and not be so totally consumed with himself. Maybe in your 60s, I don't know what church you attend, but it's always good if it's possible. I don't know your work schedules or anything else. If you can get involved in feeding the poor or helping other people, and one of the best ways to get somebody out of themselves is to begin to serve others. We have an email from T, the letter T, who writes, Dearest Mother, I hope you enjoyed a very blessed and joyous Easter. I did, T. Thank you. I'm writing as a follow-up on my letter to you, written a little over 1 year ago. Thank you again for your guidance and clarity about our difficult family rift. I followed your wise advice and continue to pray for my abusive sister from a safe distance and have had many masses said privately for her. Unfortunately, during this time, my sister's behaviors have resurfaced. She is trying to agitate me and my husband and children again, this time going as far as applying to join a private club that we belong to, a place that's been a refuge of privacy for us during the years of this volatile family rift. Oh dear, she seems eager to gain access to us in this private place and to once again try to turn others against us. Her second husband recently died. However, she was dating another man while that husband was still alive and in nursing care. Now that he has passed, she's already heavily involved with a new man. This man has strong ties to several internationally famous celebrities, one of whom is an entertainer known for recent performances with disturbing occult themes. My sister has been photographed with these people in tabloid magazines and on the internet. She's quite emboldened by this, as you can imagine, and I think she wants to show off to me how influential and powerful she is now, and to inspire envy. What she does not understand is that I am trying to live a Christ-centered life with my children and am unconcerned with that brand of worldliness, as I think it is very spiritually dangerous, among other reasons. On the contrary, T, I think she does understand that. Your sister is desperate for love. She is desperate for acknowledgement. She is desperate to be felt worthy, to be included, to be counted among the normal. She does understand that. She's enormously envious of you. I will tell you that without having met her, just from what you've said. T goes on to say, in an effort to maintain our privacy at this club and to protect our family, we wrote a letter to the admissions board asking them to reconsider my sister's new application, which we believe is malicious in nature and intended to cause upset and embarrassment for my family. In our letter, we explained our situation as delicately as we could to the board. This has turned into a very big deal, as my sister is now fighting tooth and nail against us to be admitted, and the board will render its decision this week. I wish you had written to me prior to that. I would never, ever have recommended that to you. Never have recommended that to you. There are many, she writes, many private clubs in our area that she could join without any problem. Many clubs, much nicer than ours. It seems obvious that she chose this particular one to gain access to us and begin stirring up family drama again. I agree with you, and you should never involve the you should not have involved the club in this whatsoever. She says, this brings me to my first question, Mother. Is writing a letter to block my sister's application a sinful thing to do? Well, it's not virtuous. I won't say it's sinful, but it's not wise, and it wasn't virtuous. Is it wrong to protect our children by speaking out against a family member who's been abusive? No, but it depends upon who you speak to. Speaking to public people, such as a club, is not advisable whatsoever. You don't make it private. She says, sometimes it's difficult to discern when to protect one's family and when to turn the other cheek. Well, sometimes that is difficult, but if you're struggling, if you can turn the other cheek and bear with it, that's fine. If you find you cannot, then you separate yourself. She says, or said another way, what is the difference between forgiving 7 times 70, loving our enemies and actively protecting one's family. There's no difference. You do forgive 7 times 7, 70. You do love your enemies, but you must protect one family. And in the situation you have described, she has done everything she can to become a member. Yes, to irritate you, all of that. You simply keep the world out of it. Keep the club out of it. You've just given her the battle she wanted. You simply quit the club. That's what you do. You just go your way and join another club, whether you want to or not. It's not a matter of what's fair. You just go your way and don't feed into her movements. T says, my second question involves my extended family. Confrontations with my sister are typically erratic, malicious, and sometimes even violent. To avoid dealing with her, other family members prefer to remain largely uninvolved in the face of my sister's behaviors against me. They should be uninvolved. They should be uninvolved. T, your priority is your family. You must protect your family and do what's best for them and the growth of your children. And you must love your sister. Always treat her in a loving way. Not violent, not confrontations, no arguments. She is mentally ill. And you just simply must treat her in love. And then take your family away to not give her room to do what she's trying to do. T writes, while hoping from a safe distance that I'm successful. Hold on a minute. In fending her off and likely benefiting from my effort, you will not be successful with her. You will not. You will only be successful with her when she feels loved and accepted by you. Now, that's going to be a challenge on your part. But that's the only way you will ever fend her off, when she feels loved and accepted by you, because she knows she's not worthy of that. She knows that. You say, while hoping from a safe distance that I'm successful in fending her off and likely benefiting from my efforts, they are shielded from the negative consequences of taking a stand openly against my sister. It seems they play both ends. They, meaning your sister and her boyfriend, I guess. They are shielded from the negative consequences of taking a stand openly against our sister. It seems they play both ends against the middle. If I successfully block my sister's access to this private place, they benefit greatly for many reasons. You're right. But if my erratic sister is admitted anyway, in spite of my efforts, my extended family can safely take a step back, appearing innocent of opposing her, and allow my husband, children, and me to potentially face her wrath alone. T, you're completely on the wrong foot. Totally on the wrong foot. Leave your family to have their relationship with your sister. Leave them alone. Don't involve them in your relationship with her. And if she comes to this club, tell your husband, we simply need to end our membership in this club. And if we still want a club, we'll go to the next one. And if she wants to follow you to the next one, you go to the next one. You say, well, that's not fair. This is a sick woman. Don't worry about what's fair. It's never going to end. And you should not involve a public place like the club, and you should not involve anyone in your family. This is between you and your sister. You must speak to her in love all the time. Speak the truth in love to her, but calmly. And let her, if you argue, if you fight, if you deal with her on her basis, she has won. You are feeding into us, her. You say, this is so confusing to me. Is it ethical or merciful to play both ends against the middle? Absolutely not. Regardless of who is on the side of the good, no. Why or why not? You don't play anything. You simply deal with your sister in love. In love. And if she's too much for you, being in the same club as you, which she's done obviously on purpose, you leave that club. Don't fight it. You're causing a bigger scene than she ever will. There's the music for our final break, and I'll complete this email at the end of the break. Beloved, they'll still, when we come back, rather, and we'll still have 10 minutes, and you're welcome to call in with anything on your mind. We'll be right back. A prayer to the Sacred Heart that St. Gertrude the Great wrote, I salute thee, O Sacred Heart of Jesus, living and vivifying source of eternal life, infinite treasure of the divinity, ardent furnace of divine love. Thou art the place of my repose and my refuge. Enkindle in my heart the fire of that ardent love with which thine own is inflamed. Pour into my heart the great graces of which thine is the source, and grant that my heart may be so closely united to thine that thy will may be mine, and that my will may be eternally conformed to thine, since I desire that henceforth thy holy will may be the rule of all my desires and all my actions. Amen.
Hi, Joe McLean here, host of A Catholic Take, heard on the Station of the Cross each weekday morning at 7 a.m. Eastern. A bold synthesis of information and inspiration, keeping you up to date on the news and issues that you may have missed from a courageous Catholic perspective. That's A Catholic Take, weekday morning, 7 a.m., right here on the Station of the Cross and the free iCatholic Radio mobile app. Download it today. God love you.
Hear a powerful sermon you need to share with a loved one? Maybe there's a guest, prayer, or teaching segment that deserves another listen. You can listen to any of our network-produced programs at your convenience by finding us wherever you enjoy podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Podbean, and the free iCatholic Radio app. Be uplifted in your faith. Listen today at thestationofthecross.com or on your favorite podcasting platform.
Welcome to Mother Miriam Live on the Station of the Cross Catholic Radio Network with live video streaming brought to you by LifeSite News and the Station of the Cross. Call Mother with your questions at 1-877-511-5483 or email her at mother@thestationofthecross.com.
Welcome back, beloved, to Mother Miriam Live. This is our last segment. We have 10 minutes. You are welcome to call in with anything on your heart or to email toll-free 1-877-511-5483 or email at mother@thestationofthecross.com. We're in the middle, well, just about at the end of an email from someone named T, who has a sister that is in the family that is tremendously problematic. And the family, husband and wife, husband of T and children, have joined a particular club. And now her sister is joining that club. And T has gone to great lengths to ask the club not to admit her, which is a great mistake. It's not Christian. It's not a good witness. It involves the public and what's not their business. And you're putting them in a very, very poor position. They should not make that decision. And so T writes, if I successfully block my sister's access to this private place, they, her family, benefit greatly for many reasons. But if my erratic sister is admitted anyway, in spite of my efforts, my extended family can safely take a step back, appearing innocent of opposing her. Yes, they can, because they have gone to the club to eliminate her and allow my husband, children, and me to potentially face her wrath alone, because you're the ones that have gone to the club to complain. You will face the wrath alone. They haven't done it. You have. She says, this is so confusing to me. Is it ethical or merciful to play both ends against the middle? Absolutely neither ethical or merciful, regardless of who is on the side of good. No, no. Why or why not? You simply need to speak the truth in love to every soul, especially your sister. Without exception, you need to realize that your sister has deep, deep needs to be loved, to be approved of. And she will try to counter you and oppose you at every step as long as she can defeat you. What she needs is your love and approval. And every time you speak to her, you should speak with kindness, absolute kindness. You could still leave the club, which you should. If you can't handle her being there, then you leave the club. But don't go to the club and tell them you're leaving because your sister's here. It's not their business. And she writes, it just seems that malicious people benefit when good people scatter and hide instead of taking a stand. They do not benefit. They do not benefit. If you scatter and hide, then you are not benefiting her at all. The only thing that will benefit your sister is love. And if you don't find a way to love her and speak calmly to her, that doesn't approve her, but it means you love her. It means you turn like Saint Therese of Lisieux did when she couldn't possibly love a certain sister in her convent. She said, Jesus, I can't love her. You love her through me. Speak the truth in love with Jesus' love. And if she said, oh, you're leaving because I joined? You say, you know, that is why I'm leaving. I'm sorry to be leaving, but I don't want to increase the difficulty between us. So if you're here, I don't mind going someplace else. Not you caused me to go someplace else. Speak the truth in love. And T says, thank you from the bottom of my heart, Mother. Your ministry has been such a help to those of us in great need. We are trying to live a life pleasing to God amidst great confusion, and we are so grateful for you with love, gratitude, and a resounding Jesus, I trust in you. Thank you, T. You need to stop letting your sister control your life, and you need to live a life of love with our Lord. Leave her alone. Let her do what she wants. Don't come against her. If she's in your way and it's too much for you, just leave the club and join something else or go home with your family. And don't let her even think it's because of her. Always because she says, oh, you're leaving because I joined? Say in love, you know, that is why we're leaving, but we don't mind your joining. It's just that you know that there's conflict between us and I don't want to have a venue for it to increase. We don't mind leaving. It's no problem at all. I hope you enjoy your membership. Speak in love to her. You will confuse her. She will find out that nothing she does can attack you, can defeat you, can make you angry. Nothing she does, that you only and always respond in love. And through that love and wisdom, she will be converted. T, you need to do that. You protect your family by teaching them virtue, not by fighting. By teaching them virtue, by teaching them how to love difficult people, especially your own flesh and blood. There's not a soul you will meet in life who is angry, who is malicious, who is opposing you, fighting you, coming against you. There's not a soul on earth you will ever meet whom love cannot cure. We love because he first loved us. People don't know how to respond to genuine love. Saying, oh, I'm praying for you, that's not love. They'll take it as sarcasm. Don't do that. Truly love them. You mean you're leaving this club because I joined? Yes. Well, what's the problem? The problem is the difficulty between us. Don't say, I know you joined because you want to create trouble and show how popular. Don't say any of that. The problem, dear sister, is that I do love you, and I don't want this difficulty between us to fester and to grow and to continue. So if you've chosen this club, we've enjoyed it for a while. It's time we go to another club. It won't be a problem. Truly, we hope you enjoy it. No matter what she says to you, just say, sister, I wish you well. That's it. Not I'll pray for you. Don't do that. Of course, you do pray for her, but don't say it under those circumstances. And then you leave the club. And you say to this, the people in your membership, you know, this is not opportune for our family anymore at this point. Nothing against the club. We're going to end our membership. And you don't tell them it's because of your sister. I know it's too late in your case because you have. Keep your family problems, everybody. Keep them to yourself. Women, if you have a husband that you complain about for any reason, minor or major, don't go out with your girlfriends to lunch and tell them. You will be in great sin. There's no love that tells anybody, even your best friend, about your husband's faults and weaknesses. Men, there's no virtue in telling your friends about your wife and her failures. There's no virtue in that. Start living for God. Start living your vocation to be the best and most holy husband, knight in shining armor, you could ever be by laying down your life for your wife, as Ephesians 5 says. Wives, be the holiest, most devoted, not a dust map, not a doormat, but a holy, devoted wife, submitting to your husband as to the Lord, not in sin, but let your husband be who God has made him, the head of the house. Don't be challenging him. Let him take his directives as long as they're not sin, and live in love and holiness. If you begin to show respect for your husband, I promise you, you will have the knight in shining armor that you long for. God bless all of you, and we'll speak with you, God willing, tomorrow.